Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. What is the Dharma and how can it help us to meet the challenges we all face on a daily basis? In this week's talk by meditation instructor Eric Weinberg entitled Dharma in Daily Life, we examine the nature of the Dharma, not just as a collection of theoretical teachings, but as a direct, practical, and active path to help us negotiate our everyday life and our interactions with others. We examine the importance of a daily meditation practice in conjunction with the studying of the Dharma to help us use whatever arises for the practice of compassion. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
The topic's supposed to be Dharma in daily life, so in a way, it works out. But it's particularly a chapter in a book, which I don't have the book with me, and I didn't even read it. So I kind of lived it, yeah, or at least I lived the title. And I can't report to you what His Eminence Thaisittu Rinpoche says about Dharma in daily life, but I certainly can talk about it a little bit. And I think it would be good actually to really dig into that subject in a way where anybody who feels like they have a question or a comment, that you should really feel free, because the one thing we all have is a daily life. And by virtue of you being here, it's obvious that you have some kind of aspiration to bring the Dharma to it. So I like this topic. I saw Lama Kathy in the hall. She said, well, I sent you the, she sends out this little thing on the Monday before you give a talk. It's called A Friendly Reminder. Well, if there was ever a week when I could have used a friend, let alone a reminder, this would have been a good one. But I missed that email. So this is going to be coming really from my experience. For those of you who know me, you know me. For those of you who don't, I'm Eric Weinberg. I'm on the board here. And I've been practicing meditation since 1974. And I came to the Dharma in the late 90s. So this has been part of my daily life for a while, and maybe there's something worth saying about all of this. So that's my hope. Keep a good thought for me in your heart that I actually have something worthwhile, and that what I have to say is of some benefit. When we do Dharma talks here, we always start out with a refuge prayer. Actually, that's actually not a bad thing in daily life, and that's probably where I will start out my talk, is actually how my day goes. And maybe we can see how that fits and that doesn't fit. For any of you, I can tell you this: through all the phases of positive and negative experiences, and there obviously are both for me, because simply I'm not an enlightened being yet. The thing that continually does provide me some refuge, particularly when the times are tough, is my relationship with the Dharma. It's not exactly, so before we even do the refuge prayer, I want to say this because I think it's important. What I've come to understand is, yeah, the Dharma's a thing. I mean, it's teachings, it's books. There are all kinds of nouns to describe what Dharma is. But more importantly, it is a relationship. So it's more of an action, it's more of a verb, it's more of what's happening. And our minds in general aren't used to that. So, you know, some people think of refuge and they think, oh, it's raining, I'm going to get an umbrella. And certainly there are aspects to it that are like that, but it's more than that. It's like, it's raining outside. How can I use this rain as a benefit for myself or others? How can I protect others who may need protection? Because there's always that. If it's if times are difficult for me, obviously I'm not alone. We're all connected. And this interdependence is really one of the core teachings of Buddhism. There are two, only two. This is why I like Buddhism. It's so much easier to learn. Two things to believe in. One is that you have the same nature as the Buddha. You have exactly the same quality, exactly the same quantity, exactly the same brightness and preciousness. And we believe it because we don't see ourselves that way. That's only because it's clouded over. The analogy is usually given that the sun's always shining, whether there are clouds or not. When everything's clouded over, you just have to believe the sun's out there, right? So that's why it's a belief. It is also true that we're able to clear clouds. So the Dharma is not so much about belief, it's about method. It's a lot of method and little belief. And that's what, it's a lot of things, but principally in terms of how it works out in our daily lives as ordinary people. The cosmology is not so important. It's interesting, and you get it when you can get it, but it's not so important. All the philosophy, really important and interesting, but not as important as the practice itself. It's often called a path. It's good to keep in mind that it's called a path. That's what Dharma is. So the first refuge is Buddha. Well, that's in you already. It's not going to be like conferred on you magically after you do so many things. It's already there. We're just working on clearing away what keeps you from realizing it's there. The second refuge is Dharma. Dharma is a lot of things like books and teachings and so on, but principally it's a path. It's an action. It's the way we move through the world. So Dharma in daily life is a really important thing to talk about because we're really talking about path in a very direct way. And that path has one aspiration, really, to uncover our own true nature, which is the same nature as the historical Buddha. And we do that for our own benefit and for the benefit of all others. Brings us to the second belief. The second belief is that everything's connected. It's all connected. We call it interdependence, or it's fancy. The 12 links of interdependent origination. It's all. But what that means is everything's connected. What you think, do, and say matters. So we come back again to the path, and the path helps us to train what we think, do, and say for two purposes. One, to create positive momentum in our lives. We call it karma. And to avoid the negative momentum in our lives, so that we can get on down the path and move towards what we aspire to, which is to realize this, what's already there, what's already our true nature. The other side of that is that we do it for ourselves and others. And the others, all of us together, is the third thing we take refuge in, which is Sangha, community. Technically, they talk about two communities. One is the community of enlightened beings, because there's, you know, that's the nice thing. Rather than having one or two or three or a half dozen or whatever, divine beings and the rest of us, in this case, we all have Buddha nature. Some of us have realized it and some of us haven't. So we're all in it together, but we do recognize that we can go to help or go for help to those that have some realization. So we honor the realized among us, and we're companioning the best we can with kindness and compassion, all of us, you know. We support each other in our path. So this idea of Dharma in daily life is actually, in one way, in my mind, about refuge. So it's good to, in a deep way, not just a perfunctory way of saying the words, it's good to recognize what the refuge is, the very first thing. So let's do that. Chant the refuge prayer together. I'm going to chant it in Tibetan three times. If you know that Tibetan, that's great. Join me. If you don't, just follow along in your heart with the idea of taking refuge in the Buddha, both the Buddha who is historical and pointed out this whole truth, and also the Buddha in your own heart. Take refuge in the Dharma, which is the path. And take refuge in the Sangha, the community of all of us here, as well as those that we don't see who have realized and that actually continue to work on our behalf and pray for us. Those that we can still see and those that we can't. Sanje Chudong Soki Chognam La Chang Chu Pardu Dagni Kyab Su Chi Daki Jin Soki Pe Sunam Ki Rola Penchi Sanje Drupar Sho Sanje Chudong Soki Chognam La Chang Chu Pardu Dagni Kyab Su Chi Daki Jin So Gi Pe Sunam Gi Drola Penshir Sanje Dru Par Sho Sanje Chu Dang So Ki Chok Nam La Chang Chu Pardu Dagni Kyab Su Chi Daki Jin So Gi Pe Sunam Gi Drola Pen Shir Sanje Drupar Sho. Thank you. So this will be interesting. I think, you know, for those of you who are reading this book, it'd be good for everybody to read the chapter Dharma in Daily Life. Compare it to whatever I have to say, and then come back and say, you make no sense. And we can talk about it, and maybe that would be good for everybody. I have a particular connection to His Eminence Thaisithu. He came to Columbus in the late 90s when actually Lama Kathy was in 3-year retreat. And I had an executive kind of job downtown, and I wore shiny shoes and a suit every day and all that kind of stuff. I mean, seriously, the shoes had to shine. That was like one of the prerequisites. And I was walking through the Short North back when the Short North was just transforming itself into art galleries. Now it's gone through more transformations. But back then, all kinds of people would be wandering around. And when there was something at KTC, we would print handbills and staple them up to telephone poles in the Short North. And seemed like that was a good place to let people know what was going on. And this guy, Thaisithu, is actually like the guru of the Karmapa. He's the heart son of the 16th Karmapa that's transmitting the lineage from literally through from the 16th through him to the 17th Karmapa. And he was coming to Columbus. Anyway, I didn't know who he was, but I saw his picture and he had this kind of radiant smile. And I was transfixed by this picture. And I said, boy, I got to meet this guy. I want to meet this guy. So I ended up going to the Friday night public talk, and I had a great time. He was very funny. I laughed a lot. And I thought, boy, this is unusual for a powerful spiritual master. I think I'll do more. And so I did more. I did the rest of the weekend at Columbus KTC. And back then, I was thinking, it's like all of us, you know? It's like life's not easy. It wasn't easy for me back then any more than it was easy this week. And back then, I thought, this guy could be my umbrella. You know, that's what I need. And maybe he can give me what I need for protection, or, you know, figuring out how to do this better so it wasn't so uncomfortable. And because I know life is good. Everybody tells me that. And now and then I get a glimpse of that. And, you know, I want more of that and less of this other, all the stress and challenge and all of that kind of thing. So I went and I was very impressed, and I think I was very blessed, but he didn't give me that umbrella, not that one that I wanted, you know. What he did, though, was he inspired me to find out more about this path. And eventually I had an interview with Lama Kathy, and everything progressed from there. The truth is that as it's unfolded, I've come to realize that life is life. It's unfolding the way it unfolds. A lot of it depends on, you know, interdependence. What I've done in the past kind of has its way of creating the causes and conditions for what unfolds now and in the future, and that's immutable. It's the third thing Buddhists believe in. It goes with interdependence, so it's really only the second thing, but we call it karma. And And so the issue becomes, okay, if life's going to be what life is, how do you work with it? How do you make it workable? And I began to recognize that, with Lama Kathy's help, that there are a bunch of tools here to use to learn to work with it instead of just be reacting to it. So, obviously when I get what I want, I'm happy. And I try to set things up so I get what I think I want. And sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. And then I get what I don't want. And I'm unhappy when it doesn't go the way I want it to go. And it turns out that none of it, even the most dramatic, most powerful moments that are the scariest, none of it lasts, ever. Doesn't last. That's also true of when everything's just right and I want to make it last, it doesn't last. So I began to recognize this, and I talked to Lama Kathy about this, and she said that was actually a good thing to recognize, and that's why we practice every day, because our minds are simply used to trying to get what we want, trying to avoid what we don't want, and we spend literally all day long, every day, trying to get what we think we want and trying to avoid what we don't want. Even though if you're reflective about your life, maybe we're coming up to that season where you get a day off and you might reflect a little bit and you realize sometimes that when you got what you wanted, it wasn't the best thing for your life, and when you don't, and some of the things you didn't want that you got anyway turned out to be extraordinary blessings in terms of your growth and a lasting positive impact. So we actually aren't very good at perceiving what it is that we should like and what we shouldn't like. All of that comes from habits that we have ingrained. Whether you believe in this idea that life streams are literally beyond this very lifetime or you don't believe in that, doesn't matter. You can see how habit builds up. It's clear that some people, it's clear that there's no objective reality in terms of what you should like or don't like. We all like different kinds of music, for instance. Some people will love jazz and hate country. Some people will love country and hate jazz, and vice versa, and all of that. Which one's really the best? There's no best. We have habits for liking and not liking. So from the dharmic point of view, from the daily point of view, those habits are pretty unreliable. They're not some objective source. The most important thing that we can do is to work with our minds, therefore. Because if I was going to put a picture in your mind about this, every time you think or do or say something, it puts a little imprint on your consciousness. And then you realize that that worked or that didn't work. Like after this talk, I'm sure I'll go home and I'll think, oh, I should have said this, I shouldn't have said that, I'll have all kinds of little reactions to even what I did myself. I do that because I always want what I want. I always want positive feedback, right? I don't never want negative feedback. The truth, though, is when I get positive feedback, I don't grow much. When I get negative feedback, I realize that I can do something better and I apply myself to improving. So what's really better? It's interesting. Still, my habit will be to go home and to be self-critical. That's just a habit. So what happens is every time I do that, and my thinking flows in that way, imagine a creek or stream running through a valley. Just imperceptibly, little by little, it wears that groove just a little deeper. So the next time through, that stream of thought, that stream of consciousness is going to flow a little more defined in those banks, and I'll have a little more of this kind of false identity that grows because I think if I get what I want and if I avoid what I don't want, I'll be happier. It's so funny. After all these years, I can honestly say, that isn't how it works. I don't get happiness that way. That's not how happiness happens. And ultimately, that's all I'm trying to do is to be happy. Even though it doesn't, though, I can't help doing it because that's what my mental habit is. So that's called self-clinging. That's what self-clinging is. It's the habit of recognizing our lives the way we recognize our lives. The Buddha said, Shakyamuni said, that's the cause of suffering. Because we're not that person. We're actually enlightened beings to be. We have that potential. And our happiness will come at realizing directly that that's who we are. So, he said, the good news is that since that's a cause, there's a solution. You've heard all that before. And the solution is in a few parts: do no harm to yourself or others. If you think about it, that has to do with being patient and being ethical, which are two of the six perfections. Practicing virtue as much as possible, which has to do with being generous to yourself and generous to others. Give yourself a break. Hard to do, though, because the thoughts are still in that stream trying to be self-critical because we think that's going to be the way. We're going to try to straighten other people out because we think that's how everything will get better. I don't know if there are any school teachers here, but classroom discipline is a big deal. How often do you maintain discipline with unruly kids in particular by making them heal, so to speak, you know, come to heal? Never works, ever. You have to be much more skillful. Well, same thing here. So practicing virtue isn't just like clicking a button and giving some charity. It's like carrying that in your heart. And this is where it gets to daily life, because you'll have an opportunity. You have an opportunity right this minute in some way, right? And then he said, totally tame your mind, which is where I wanted to get to. Because truthfully, we're not able to be very patient given our mind streams flowing through those valleys that we've cut for ourselves over eons and eons of time. We have to cut some new paths. Because we know neuroplasticity is a thing from modern psychology, we can do that. We can do that. That's one of the brilliant things. We can look at a situation, and rather than go down the same road, we can absolutely do something different and make that the new path. And that's what the Dharma is Dharma in daily life is all about. It's taking these teachings in an applied way. It's not theoretical physics. You're never going to get it if you just want to get the ideas straight. I mean, it's good to get the ideas straight. I'm not denigrating that. But you'll never get it until you start applying it. That's it. It's all about the application. And then you're changing the conditions within which the experiment's happening, and you're going to start to see more. So this totally tame your own mind piece is really important. And in terms of Dharma in daily life, I'll just share how it is for me. I get up in the morning. I get myself to the bathroom. Then I get myself into the shrine room, even before I get a cup of coffee. Used to be I get coffee first, see, but that's changed now. I just woke up. I don't really need a cup of coffee. I think it's really beneficial for me to get in there the first chance I get. And I have a little room. It's just small, near my bedroom. So I just walk into there, close the door, and I do the practices that I have. And principally, what's really most important, I think it's helpful to do this. It's important for me to have some kind of a shrine set up where I have some representation, physical representations, not as idols or something, but as what this reality inside myself is. So a little statue of the Buddha or picture of the Buddha, you know, maybe a couple bodhisattvas around, things like that. I have a painting of our Karmakaji refuge tree because I find this lineage is precious to me, and that's my sangha. And I have texts. So I have representations of the three jewels, and then I make offerings out of gratitude to have another day to be alive and to actually, to the best of my ability, to manifest my own, whatever glimpse of Buddha nature I can get in myself and whatever glimpse other people might get, just out of kindness and compassion. So I take refuge and I make offerings and I do a little meditation. And then I move on and go make a cup of coffee and get some breakfast, and that's how that goes. And sure, I miss, not often anymore. It used to be, you know, might be one day off, one day on, you know, it's like, but as this is worn on and I've gotten used to it and the habit's gotten deeper, now it's just pretty much every morning, but it's not a forced thing. It's just, that's my habit now. And what happens is, because meditation at the base of it has two fundamental aspects. One's calming down, and the other's waking up. Calming down has to do, as you all know from doing shamatha practice, having some kind of view of yourself as being the sky and everything else that comes up. Everything else that comes up is being weather. And because it's weather, you know it's going to change and you can let it go. You don't have to identify with the clouds that come or the clarity that comes. You just appreciate that it's there, appreciate that it's going. Given it's important to do that, that's shamatha practice, is seeing thoughts, feelings, sensations, hopes, regrets, all that comes up for all of us. That's a human thing. But to see it as something that appears and letting that go, that's a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing. Because stuff's going to happen all day long. And, you know, you're going to do stuff by accident that's going to piss people off. And then you're going to have to absorb that. If you can absorb that and think a kind thought towards this person that's unhappy or angry, that's powerful for you and for them. If, on the other hand, you're thinking, well, I had the right to do that, and, you know, I'm okay. I didn't see them. I wouldn't have done that if I had seen, and go through all of that, you're only tying yourself up in knots, and they're never even going to know. You know, they won't even know. All of our strong reactions to people, unless we're expressing them directly to their face, they don't know. I can hate some politician right now, and believe me, I have my days. It doesn't affect them whatsoever, not one bit. However, it affects me a lot. It sets me up for all kinds of causes and conditions. So the Dharma in daily life really comes down to everything we think, do, and say. So by starting with shamatha, I'm at least in a better position to recognize when that hatred comes up, when that anger comes up, when that thought comes up. I can note it and then let it go. And maybe if I'm feeling particularly strong, I can do some of that other stuff. I can say, boy, they are lost and they're causing so much harm. And I can say a little prayer for them that they can wake up and think of benefiting beings. Maybe that will do them some good. Simply having that thought does me some good. So it's important to start your day with recognizing Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha in your world, and but more importantly in yourself. It's important to take that to a meditation practice. And each of us will have our own way of doing that. And it's good to work, once you know the ropes, you know, and you have the basic instructions, it's good to work with somebody about that. And get something that's for you, that you're really going to do, that you can do every morning. It gives you a chance to change the way you live your life. I don't know if this is true or not, but I've always thought myself, there's this thing in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism, called the Lion's Roar. There was a newsletter once called the Lion's Roar about the 16th Karmapa. It's funny, my high school newspaper was called the Leopard's Roar, because we were the Liberty Leopards, but that's neither here nor there. But the Lion's Roar is, to me, literally having the stance that no matter what you're looking at, everything is workable. Nothing's impossible. And then applying yourself using these things that you've created the mental habits for that we call bodhicitta, awakened mind, generosity, ethics, patience, joy, meditation, and wisdom. Applying those things to everything that comes up. To me, bodhicitta, that is the Lion's Roar. Well, that's a great concept. And I can say all those six perfections right in order. Whoop-de-doo. I guess you got to know them before you can practice in their direction. But just knowing them is not a big deal. We all can learn that. But getting on your cushion every morning and doing shamatha properly, and then maybe doing some other practice that you and your meditation teacher decides right is the right thing for you to do, you're creating the causes and conditions for that to appear when somebody cuts you off in traffic, or maybe you cut somebody else off. I think Sally, I don't know if Sally knows, I don't know. I think the other day I was teaching midday meditation at Trinity, and I had just come downtown for that. And in my parking garage, I had pulled in, And it was the day off because it was President Bush's funeral. So I wasn't downtown early. I just came down for that. And I pulled into my parking garage, and there was a parking space right there on the first floor, right to my left, and I pulled in. And this lady in the biggest Lexus SUV you ever saw, I mean, this was like a 970 SUV, this was like massive, comes whipping around this corner. She had seen that space. You know how people in parking lots are kind of vulturing for the best space? They're like, well, I just pulled in. I didn't see her at all. And I pulled into this space, and she hit her horn and squealed her tires. I mean, she burnt rubber going up the ramp to the next floor and flipped me the bird and everything else. And I mean, this happens, right? I'm not alone in this. It was like crazy. And I'm about to go teach calm abiding meditation. It's beautiful. And you know how you feel when that happens. It's like you want to go, you like smack them in the head. Don't do that to me. But I'd done my practice that morning, and I'm not taking any credit. I literally give credit to the practice, and I give credit to the teachers who have taught me my practice. And I saw it as a thought, and I let it go. And the first thought that came to me was a dedication of merit that I use that Marcus mentioned, I believe, in the last talk he gave about Second Karmapa. One of the dedications of merit, you know, at the end of every practice, we dedicate the merit of that practice. This is how important that is and how it comes into our daily life. One of them, I do a couple different dedications, but one of them is that it's a little prayer that everybody or anybody who sees me, hears me, thinks of me, touches me, or in any way has contact with me throughout the day, even if it's negative, that it would be a blessing. So even if you're angry at me, may it be a blessing for you somehow. That's my aspiration. So this woman was clearly angry with me. And the first thing that popped into my head was, oh, she's angry. May that be a blessing for her. May it transform for her. And I have no idea what happened, right? But I do know this, that it didn't hurt. It's what my grandfather used to call a VO. It wouldn't light. And a VO. A VO. It wouldn't light. Anyway, it certainly was beneficial to me. And I'm sure that, you know, if I would have perseverated or ruminated about how horrible it was that she got angry at me and I didn't see her, and I would have let her have it if I would have seen her wanting that, and all of those thoughts, whatever thoughts might have come up. Had I just entertained all of that, it wouldn't have been a good thing. I would have been certainly not mindful for the next half hour or maybe longer. And I certainly wouldn't have given a very good shamatha class at Trinity. I mean, how hypocritical, right? I mean, crazy. My mind's all over the place, except I probably would have been honest and said, my mind's all over the place. But anyway, the thing that's important, I think, is to set it up right and figure out what your practice should be every morning. It's a true gift to even hear that you can have that. It's a true gift. Don't pass it up. And make your dharma focus on practice, and then let everything else grow from that. Then I live my life, and at the end of the day, and I have my devices through the day, we don't have to go in all that. And then at the end of the day, I do a little practice also. I make sure that for me, this is for me, I make offering practices. I think of it as a treasure, as having been able to live another day. And so I want to take the goodness of that and offer it to those who are suffering. And obviously in my living room or on my front porch or wherever, they're not apparent to me. So I just do it, you know, mentally. But that's my intention. And then off to bed. And that rhythm has served me really well to bookend my day with practice. You know, I'm not saying that at the end of the day everybody should do offering practice. There are just different people who do different stuff. So that's it. I wanted to just let you know that bringing the Dharma into the daily life is a very experiential thing. It's not a theoretical thing. And the more we cultivate the habit of letting go of a thought, of looking at our minds, of using whatever arises for compassion. If you know Tonglen practice, you can apply that off the cushion Tonglen practice to your daily life. I mean, that's something I do all day long. Most people I know who know that practice do it all day long. You can learn it up in the beginning Buddhism classes. We always teach it every cycle. The point is, though, is it's not a thing to know. It's a verb. It's something to do. I try to add, this is the last thing I'll say. It's a little mental trick that I have. I try to add ing to everything. So instead of love, I want to say loving. Instead of compassion, I want to say compassioning. And so on and so forth. Reminding myself, this is just to remind myself, this is my activity. I can tell you the upshot of that is that over the long term, and it took a long time, and it's very gradual, very stable, sometimes imperceptible, I think. But looking back, I recognize I'm much more stable than I was at any other point in my history. Some people here have known me a long time and can verify that. I'm happier now than I've ever been. Even though I don't have everything that I ever dreamed of when I was 25, you know. I'm certainly happier than I ever dreamed I would be. And that's all due to my teachers and the practices they've given me and the inspiration to do them. So there's time left for questions and answers. I would love to hear any of your reflections or questions about all of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric, for the teaching.
Hi, Yi. It's good to see you.
I didn't really have any reflections, actually. But I just want to mention that the book you mentioned,
yeah,
is on Amazon Kindle edition.
Yeah.
It's $2.99. Ooh. Wants to get it. I think it's a pretty good price.
What is the book?
It's so weird. My mind is not grabbing the title right now. I can see it in my mind's eye.
Being Ultimately Perfect.
Yeah, Ultimately Perfect. That's it.
Ultimately Perfect?
Yes.
Yes, Being Ultimately. So I think it's pretty good practice. And if you could download it on your phone, it's kind of easy for you to look through.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So if you like sitting around and kind of, I don't know, whatever thought comes to you, or if you have some free time, I think reading Dharma book kind of put us into a virtual state of mind.
Yes.
So that we don't go to some other state we might not want to go to.
Right. Right.
That's all I had. Thank you.
I think that's a great idea, and for a number of reasons. That's a book that I read a long time ago. I'm reading again. It's almost like it's a new book. Dharma books are like that. They're not a, you know, they're not a one-time read like a story, like a novel or something like that. They tend to change as you change. You can see more things in them because the people who write them, at least in this case, are really beings who have realization. And they're writing from that point of view, and sometimes we can get what they're saying, and sometimes we just, oh, of course I know that. Then 5 years later, you read it again, and you say, whoa! That happens to me all the time. So I like the idea of having it on your phone. It's good.
Back to your experience in the parking garage.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about what we're missing out on when we are all agitated and upset? If we're not agitated and upset, what's going on? What are we giving up by having the reaction of being upset?
Oh. Well, I don't know about you, but there are two things that really have hyper clarity in my mind. I'm really, really clear when I'm angry. I know everything, and I'm right. And so the magnetism of anger is profound and powerful. And also fear. I'm very clear when I'm afraid of something, oh my God, you know, we're coming to the cliff and we're going to fall over. And the thing that, you know, that's what makes these emotional energies so powerful, particularly fear and anger. We're so clear when we're in the grip of them. But obviously, we're clear about something that's absolutely not true, except it's very self-centered and personal. And so what we do, what the upshot of it is we lose this glimpse we might have of our own nature, which is enlightened. That's the most horrible thing to lose. And we also lose the opportunity to create a positive energy in the whole interdependence. So the two very things that are at the root of Buddhism, your Buddha nature and everybody's Buddha nature, and interdependence get screwed up. And we end up, I call it contracting. We just contract and contract and contract until we're just like a singularity that's all self. It's kind of the ultimate ego trip. And we lose reality is what we lose. We lose interdependence and we lose what our real nature and purpose in life is. And so, therefore, we lose our happiness because that always brings sadness. And sometimes it can bring tragedy. I mean, that's what happens when people get really angry or really afraid and they turn to something that maybe they're addicted to in order to change the channel. Then you get this other layer that keeps you locked in to that. So we lose a lot. Is that too general a response?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah.
Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was a great set of reminders. And I am here actually to remind you all. I'm here because I told Kim that I would make an announcement. So I will go ahead and do that now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
That helps. That's a start. So today being the third Sunday of the month, it is Dharma Lunch Day. Not Dharma Lunch, I should say Sangha Lunch. So if you're interested, we will be meeting at about 1 o'clock. We'll be meeting at the Brassica restaurant in Bexley. It's on Main Street, corner of College. It's a good place. They have good vegetarian options and so on. Tasty. So that's my announcement, 1 o'clock.
Thanks, Paul. We can have, we have time for like one more, I think. Especially if people are going to get over to Brassica, which I think is totally great.
My name is Eric, and it's my first time speaking up here, so I'm not too good at it. But I just want to share with everybody my experience. Like a couple weeks ago, I was just at the Target down in the Lenox Center. I'm just standing there out of the way in the aisle, and somebody just ran me with their shopping cart, and it hit me like right in the back of
Ouch.
The ankles. And I don't know if anybody's ever been hit with a cart like that, but it hurts like hell. You get kind of like this adrenaline rush. And my first reaction was to be extremely angry at this person. Because he was texting on his phone. He wasn't paying attention. It's bad enough you're out on the highway and nobody's paying attention, but now I guess they're doing it. You know. So, and the thing was, I'm like, what the hell is your problem, you know? And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was texting and wasn't paying attention. And then he just immediately went on and got right back on his phone and started texting again. And that just like, you know, my reaction to him was like, oh my God, what an asshole. Or, and I was severely upset and I made a scene and got security involved or whatever because of my reaction to it. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like I was justified to be angry.
Yeah.
But then I later that day, I talked to my friend who's a counselor. She said that, you know, I've just got to stop reacting to, you know, this guy clearly, he maybe just wasn't aware that he hit me that hard, or he might just be ignorant, or he's just not truly sincere, or, you know, he doesn't care. So, but I took it all on and reacted to it and kind of made it seen at Target
mm-hmm.
because of what had happened to me. And, because she says, like, our egos build these little cases like an attorney. Like, oh, all these little things
right.
happen, and you feel justified in feeling angry. And so since then, I just let stuff go. Even, like, this micromanager boss at my job, from that one incident, I have truly had a 360 turnaround relationship with this micromanager boss that was just driving me nuts.
That's awesome. Thank you. You should do this again.
It can be done.
It can't. It's possible.
Everything's workable. That message means a lot.
Everything's workable.
Workable. Yeah.
Do you look to get away with running the cards just because it makes you angry?
What now?
Do you let people get away with running with a card by mistake?
I don't know what you mean. Get away with it?
I don't know what you're supposed to do.
You don't understand. Nobody gets away with anything.
Is he saying he shouldn't have been angry or he shouldn't have had security?
Well,
I reacted to the situation rather than just remaining myself, you know what I mean, or just remaining composed was my mistake. That's what I took away from it. But that was only after talking to my friend because I made a huge scene in Target. You know, I got security involved.
Right.
I brought this guy back over there and kind of like wanted him to apologize to me. And he wasn't even capable of apologizing because he didn't care. He tried to truly been given for us to study technique.
There you go.
Get out of there and be done with it. And it was my toxic way of reacting that just made things matters worse. I mean, I can't force somebody to be sincere. What I was trying to do was to impose my values on this person. I was wanting them to be a decent human being and apologize in a sincere way. But if they're not capable of doing that, like, how am I forced them to do that?
You could seek a form of reparation.
What's that?
Reparation?
Yeah, we actually need to close this down. I think the issue is that if you want to respond, we all have different levels of ability and skill. And sometimes, depending on your level of ability and skill, it's huge to let it go in yourself and to have a good thought for this person that obviously needs to wake up. That's the start. You may have another level of skill where you know just the right thing to say that could possibly help them refrain from harming themselves and others in the future. Because honestly, that guy harmed himself more than even he harmed Eric, my namesake. He doesn't know it, but ultimately that's the case, because he just doing what he does is deepening his own habit, which is deepening his own unhappiness and ignorance, just like we all do when we deepen our own habits and ignorance. And if you're really, really skillful, you might be able to penetrate the situation and do something creative and positive in terms of causing them to wake up. Those people that are able to do that are just people who have achieved great insight. There's a problem with reparations, as you say. It's a matter of everybody finding a way to take responsibility for their own actions is what's really important. If he recognized the harm and could apologize, that'd be one thing, but Eric says that he couldn't. So there's really not much you can do except say a little prayer for him. It's true. We're not the law, you know what I'm saying? That whole idea of we're all going to somehow defend some conceptual reality that we've created ourselves is in itself pretty ignorant. It's a problem. But that's a longer discussion. That's a whole other talk. So I think the issue is that we all have a narrative we tell ourselves. We all have a load of concepts about life and about ourselves. And it's those very narratives and concepts that more often than not cause suffering rather than cause happiness. And that's why practice itself is more important than anything, because creating the habits to drop our concepts, to drop our narratives, to drop our reactions, and have a fresh, creative approach to every moment is the best we can do at our level. It may be different for somebody like Thay Sithu, actually. I don't know. I'm not that guy. But for us, cultivating freshness and an open, creative space where our intelligence and our creativity can work, if it's motivated by kindness and compassion, most of the time it's going to be good. And that's the best we can do at our level, I think. That's the best I can do at my level. I'm convinced of that. So, Let's dedicate the merit. First and foremost, let's dedicate the merit of hearing and thinking about sharing the Dharma with our teachers. May they live long, healthy, and productive lives. May all their wishes for the benefit of beings come to fruition. May we dedicate the merit to the communities that we live in, the whole world community that we live in, that it would find peace and health, and that even the thought of famine and poverty and sickness not arise for people in the future. And that we dedicate the merit to all the beings that we personally will be meeting, even if it's just through thought today, that just because of that connection, whatever it is, whatever kind of connection it is, that blessings would flow for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.